Okay, welcome back to the 24 Hour Athlete podcast. It's probably been about 18 months since the last one, so I thought I would get another one going. And it's a busy time of year for football, really, with pre-season coming up, pre-season friendlies. So today I've got Luke Jenkinson with me. Luke is the lead strength and conditioning coach and sports scientist with Sheffield United Academy. But I'm not going to steal his thunder. I'm going to introduce Luke to you and he can explain a bit about himself.
Super, good afternoon, Andrew. So, yeah, as you say, my name's Luke Jenkinson. I'm the lead F&D coach up at Sheffield United Academy. As you know, Andrew, I'm primarily responsible for our under 18, from our under 7 through to under 16, so sort of our part time players. It's my main role and responsibility up at the club. There's four of us up at the club, the in classes, perhaps F&D coaches, sports scientists. That work right across the board, but as I say, my primary responsibility is the 16 down to under 7, so in a sort of pre-pubescent and that early window post-puberty.
Excellent. It's an interesting age group as well. I know I worked with that age group at Stevenage, although primarily with the under 18s, but working along with the under one, younger ones at the under 9s and sort of 10s, 11s, 12s, it's a really interesting age group, especially when strength and conditioning is involved. Because I think a very old school way of thinking is, you know, kids shouldn't do any form of strength training, or you know, I think the word strength and conditioning, I suppose athletic development is a better way of putting it for a buy-in. But strength and conditioning can sound quite daunting. How do you up there at Sheffield United? And I've been up and I've met you and I've met some of your players and, you know, spent you know, some time with you up there and, you know, doing some great work up there, by the way. But how do you think that the parents perceive strength and conditioning in academy football?
I think it's constantly growing and developing. So I've been at the club now for 5 seasons. When I originally set out to be an F&D coach 7 years ago, I perhaps wanted to, what I perceived to be an F&D coach back then was someone that was just going to be mainly based in the weight room and we're going to do bits of conditioning, and I sort of happened to fall into my role that I see more as an athletic development role. And of course, F&D in the UK is a fairly new industry, so I think now we're starting to get parents, players that have only ever known of an academy system that has S&C or sports science or athletic development as part of the programme. I'm fortunate enough up at Sheffield United with our academy manager, Nick Cox, who is very pro-sports science and athletic development and sees the worth of valuing what we do. So I'm fortunate enough to get around 33% of their overall programme, so a third of their week is spent with myself and the staff at the sports science staff at the club. So I think whilst ever we've got a management system and a programme that really focuses and sees value in the work that we're doing, then that's reflected through to how the players and the parents perceive it, and the role of CPD in parent education and player education, I think is vitally important, because perhaps from conversations so on and parents or obsessions and almost wonder why the hell is my kid playing this game, or why is this that's perhaps not with a football and how does that transfer? So I think it's vitally important that all parties are educated, that there's buy-in from everyone, really. Because I know if you ask me to do something that I didn't see any worth or value in transferring to my end goal, then why the hell am I going to put all my effort into it? Why am I going to continue doing it and putting time and effort into that?
Yeah, no, it's a good point there, Luke. And something that just struck me there thinking about, I mean, S&C is reasonably new. It's new to me. You know, I had a okay playing career, but it's new to me. And not, maybe not so much now that I'm involved in it. But if I go back, there was nothing really like that. And, you know, the experience I can have with people is say, you know, we didn't have that. This will improve you. With regards to the transfer into sport, 2 points on that, I suppose, is, A, most kids like Ronaldo, and he's been, my personal opinion of the guy is that I think he's been brilliant to highlight what, you know, athleticism and how athletic football players are in strength and power. But if I flip that coin again, or if I flip it over, one thing that is becoming a little bit frustrating as S&C coaches is some of the things you see on videos of masks and ladders attached to ropes and bungees, and which really don't have much of a transfer into the game. You know, I've seen people running parallel with each other with bungee ropes. Well, I've played football since I was 9 years of age and I'm now knocking on 40. I'm not sure I've ever seen anyone attached. Well, I've never marked one, anyone with a bungee attached to me. So, you know, I don't.
I know what you're referring to, and a lot of the social media stuff is, in my personal opinion, it's marketed very well, and it is perhaps something a bit different, something a bit sexy that people can quite easily buy into and jump into when they've not got the foundations or the groundwork built, but just as always looking for a quick fix or the easy way of doing stuff. And as I say, when it's got bells and whistles on it and sold very well, it can be quite easy to get sucked into to these sort of things. But I think anyone that has a depth of understanding or reading and background in athletic development can obviously see through that, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the real key point is it is long-term athlete development. You know, and that's something that's often missed out, where we have that kind of quick fix society, that let's get this kid to the top as quick as possible. When, you know, in your role, you know, that's the key. It's long term.
I've just focused about getting the brilliant basics done. And when they get to the age of 16, as long as we have a really strong foundation and they can perform all the basic movements of locomotion, of athletic, general athletic movement, as long as we can nail all of those movements as much as we can and they'd be free to move, then I see that I've done my job right, and we're not going to start rushing and adding things, blocks that are really high up the pyramid or further up the spectrum, because we don't need to use those yet. Those tools aren't required. We just want to get the basics nailed really well, as we say, compared to the brilliant basics, rather than worrying about the fancy stuff. Yeah, you need to earn the right to do that stuff for it to have a benefit as well. You can get a lot of bang for your buck from those brilliant basics.
Yeah, no, that's a good point again. I mean, I think the most rewarding thing about Academy S&C is seeing those players, you know, they make it at a professional level, but seeing that transition, how well they're doing, how well they respond. I think it was you that told me the Dario Gradi quote, if you want to highlight that.
Yeah, just I can't remember whether it was when we were at Crew once or where I read it. It may have just been in a BBC Sport article, but it was something that really stuck with me, that there was direct correlation between the best players and the best movers and the best movers and the best players. And he just spoke about players that are, in terms of creating the football movement, is all we're doing is using the body to create shapes and movements that are then applied to a projectile to create an end goal. And I think what he was basically applying to was the fact that if I can't coordinate my body in the correct time periods with the correct force, the correct weight, then I'm unable to make that projectile do what I want it to do. Or perhaps go along the line of sort of motor control and learning and coordination tasks that perhaps I feel like the technique that I'm trying to produce to maybe clip a ball or that cross that I'm trying to do, but I may feel that my body is doing what I'm asking it to do, whereas in fact it perhaps isn't. Or and from my experience, the guys that move freely in a range of exercises, not just on a field, but the best movers, whether that be we take them to do some gymnastics or whether we're playing other team invasion sports, the best movers typically I find to be the best technicians as well. So you've got to have that level of athleticism, I believe, to reach a technically proficient level.
Yeah, I mean, go back to Ronaldo. I mean, that's a perfect example. Another one, I mean, Sergio Aguero is a pretty good mover on the pitch, low centre of gravity, but, you know, that you watch the way he moves, well, any top level footballer, and I think you can see the difference. That's the difference. You know, it's just so important. I mean, you said there about the gymnastics side. I was lucky enough to see that. I'll touch on that briefly. How did you get the parents to buy into that?
To be fair, it was they just need the level of enjoyment. So we run with our foundation based players, we run a fairly in depth gymnastics program that's fed into their sports science time each week. So on a Monday, they will do some level of gymnastics all the way from the age of 8 through to the age of 11. But it's, we use part of the curriculum that the gymnastics national government body use, but we also use taking inspiration from some of the work of like Kelvin Giles and so on, of just creating movement challenges. So even though it's called a gymnastics day, it's just a total body coordination work. But as I say, the kids buy into it because they love it, they love challenges. And through free play and letting them create shapes and create tasks, and it's quite easy to set up sessions and just set a few pointers and a few cues, and you'll see the kids' level of interaction with one another, creating challenges for themselves, pushing themselves, start sequencing movement, and it's quite empowering for the kids, I believe, to take control of their development. And they get so much, again, I think you certainly get bang for the buck, but with just loads of buying from the players, and the kids really enjoy what they're doing, the social interaction. We've got, if you want to get into the deep science of it, but we've got forces from all planes of motion, and really forceful movements as well. So it's been an integral part of our programme this season. It's in its infancy. This is our first full season of running it. And as with everything, we've assessed the programme and it will be developed for next season. But it's something that we're actively promoting the kids to do in their own time. We have a library of movements with coaching points for sort of for challenges for them to do away from the club that they have access to if they want. But most of all, they love it in terms of the benefits that we can see that they're getting from it overall. It's been very valuable to our programme, I believe.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, as I say, that time I spent with you, well, last season now, but it was brilliant to see that and to see, you know, those little kids tumbling about and having a good time as well, which is really important, because I think sometimes there's a perception that the minute you step into a professional academy, it's quite serious. And don't get me wrong, it is serious work. You know, just looking at stuff of all planes of motion and forces, etc., is brilliant, because football is played in all planes of motion. So why it's not, or in some cases it's not taught in that way, or, you know, in some SSC circles, shall we say, that doesn't, yeah, there's that, you know, why do we not train people in that way? Which, you know, we've all seen, and that's for individual coaches to, you know, they can probably rationale that, but I think it's very important. You know, if we go back to Dario Gradi, you know, the best movers are the best players. So having them at that young age, just learning to move is pretty powerful. I know when they start to get to that sort of 12, 13, 14 age, the movement can be a little bit difficult, I think.
Yeah, it can certainly get skewed. It can get played around with. Our philosophy in the programme that we're trying to do is offer so many varied experiences. So rather, if you've heard the 10,000 hours prophecy, I know coined by Nick Cox again, but we're trying to offer perhaps 10,000 experiences. So offering loads of random chaotic environments where the players can learn how to player that's been working alongside or with Pete Sturgis from the FA, who's massively buying into the role of playing in gymnastics and sort of 1950s current PE curriculum work, who again has been massively influential in the programme that we're running up there. But we need to remember that I think a lot of people, I inherited quite a closed loop programme that has loads and loads of benefits, and I'm not saying that we don't do any closed loop work, but I think it would be naive for us to constantly look at hopping, holding, maybe I might describe that as well as I wanted to, but just those real closed loop environments where we're being sort of micromanaging, can you move your knee immediately by 2 millimetres at those ages 8, 9, 10, is perhaps not what we need to be worried about at that age, rather than offering loads and loads of stimuli to the kids to thrive upon and learn to deal with, is the key in my philosophy.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you've got youth athletes who really can't control their body weight or can't control movement, then why would you put them under load? You know, I think, and I'm not just talking about football here. There's various other sports, but you know, the key component or the most important thing for those adolescents, youth athletes, is can you control your body weight? Because ultimately, that's what you're going to be using on the pitch. And I think it's very, very easy, extremely easy for us to move away from that and try and do something, go back, as we were saying earlier, that looks good. It will impress parents, it'll impress the kids, but really what benefit is that going to be? And I think that's something that needs to be kept in mind. It's not always easy, I'll admit that. I don't think it's always that easy to do that, but I do think it's something that, you know, as coaches, we should really keep in mind and so that the kids will benefit from it. It's an interesting one, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think again, my personal philosophy is by just doing that micromanaging, that real close loop stuff, it doesn't necessarily always bridge the gap from practice to performance. And in my experience, you may have got someone who's single leg hold and so on that's really good in that single leg hold, in that real closed environment where there's no external forces to be, but no external, very limited external stimuli that they're having to deal with, very little decision making, and then you put them into that random chaotic environment and there is little transfer. Whereas offering as many open loop environments as possible and getting them to be able to deal with those environments efficiently, and then if we need to coach deeper and coach further, that's when that close loop work can have a benefit. But I think it's important to say as well that we're a very successful academy in terms of what we do. I believe that we're currently ranked at 8, but there's still a hell of a lot of players that we'll come into contact with that aren't going to make it as a footballer, unfortunately. So I think it's part of our duty to offer not just a fun environment, because we're not a boys' club per se, but we need to offer an environment that's engaging, that's inspirational, that is somewhere that if they don't make it, that they can look back and say, wow, my parents and I put so much time and effort into that, and wow, that was a really great 3, 4, 5 years of my life. I've learned so much, and potentially, as we say, that long-term athletic development, that overall development for future life, whether that be nutrition, whether it be sleep, whether it just be healthy living and lifestyle, or whether it does have transfer into other sports in later life, but just also keeping them inspired to be physically active and enjoy those games, because I know close loops of real micromanaged sessions that aren't directional, that aren't competitive, can also be not very engaging. So we're trying to get the most from our sessions.
That's it. I think we're producing footballers, not robots, really, to be honest. You know, I think if I'm looking at someone, let's just say someone doing a squat, if I'm looking at their feet, that's all I'm going to see. transfer that onto the pitch, there's really no relevance, is there? You know, I'm trying to adjust their foot angle, but there isn't any much relevance there of what I'm trying to tell them to, you know, what they're doing on the pitch. If you talk about
it's applicable to this situation in the way through. As we say, as soon as we get onto that chaotic ground, you know, random sort of playing field, then we're looking for people that can produce forces that have got loads of ground contact, that are rhythmical, that are smooth, that grace the pitch. And that comes through being exposed to a lot of environments and having loads and loads of opportunities to practice those movements without a ball.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's certainly interesting work. I mean, I was very impressed when I was up there with you guys last September, I think it was. You know, it was extremely impressive and it was refreshing. I think I walked away from that saying, you know, obviously I knew Nick Cox from my time at Watford, but it was excellent to see that he was transferring a lot of his philosophy at a new club. And, you know, and you spoke, I think everyone speaks highly of Nick. And, you know, when we spoke and you said how much you'd learned from him as well. And it's just a great, refreshing philosophy to have. It's a great way of doing things differently, but still having the desired outcome.
Absolutely. We're trying to get the most from what we're currently doing, and as I say, it'd be really good for people just to come down and witness what we're doing and be massively blown away with a man that I respect so much in the FA, that's heading up the foundation phase of the FA. It's great to see that him approving of what we're doing and really challenging the concept of perhaps I was and what a lot of young SMT coaches have been taught this can you hop from one square to another, can you run from cone B to cone A as quickly as you can, and then you're gonna run from cone B to C and D, and these sort of pre planned movements that again have their place, but are they right? Because we're at that foundation phase, it's the most that I've done those sort of drills. I know just getting the level of motivation for someone to accelerate back on into a red cone and turn left to a blue cone. I know it's difficult to keep that motivation higher for those movements. Whereas if you've got a gauntlet and you've got to get past the challenge in front of you, we're going to see much more competitive directional games are going to keep that motivation and that level of maximal movements as quick as we can. And if we can drip feed coaching points into that, that we're doing those codes in the environment, surely, in my eyes, we're going to get a much more beneficial and engaging program.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. I think, I mean, football is organised chaos.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what we need to be looking at. I often think, and you know, you train in the gym, I train in the gym. It's not hard to get strong. It's not hard to get big and strong and create absolute monsters out on the pitch. But they're not bodybuilders, you know, which is actually quite far removed from what we do in S&C, you know, calling them bodybuilders. But, you know, anyone can put on a bit of muscle mass. But again, if there isn't that transfer of getting a youth athlete, and you've got, let's say, you've got that youth athlete from 9 or 10, you bring him up to the system until he's 18, signs a contract. You know, if he's an absolute monster carrying more muscle mass than he should, then really the job hasn't been done, has it?
No, absolutely not. It's we're trying to create athletes that are robust and perform for their position. And can perform for as long as possible and as efficiently as possible and as well as possible. As I say, but my goal is to then hand our under-16s over with those brilliant basics and anything else that we can fall on to their nose that are headers
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, like I said, I've sung your praises a few times, but I do think some of the work you're doing there is fantastic, and it's refreshing. It's different. It catches the eye, but it also, you know, from the time I spent with you guys, the kids love it. You know, and that was from all the age groups that I witnessed, and, you know, gave you a bit of a hand in the gym and things like that. But, you know, they loved it. You could tell, and that came across, and that's a massive thing. You know, if I've got a 14-year-old player or 15, 16 coming into the gym telling me they hate doing gym work, then really my job's not been done. And then you start wondering, well, why is that? You know, they might not understand it. They might not realise the benefits, but, you know, that's our job. That's what we've got to do. Yeah, exactly. It's a point that has come up quite a few times recently with people I've spoke to. And, you know, back in my day, you got up a ladder, you got up a rope, you climbed, you did all those things. Nowadays, I'm not sure how much of that is in schools, but that is how we learn. That's how you learn skills. That's how we learn to handle our bodies, as well as the other physical adaptations and those kind of things. But yeah, it's an interesting point.
I think a lot of proprioceptive feedback when you're clinging onto a rope 15 feet above the hair, in the air, not wanting to fall down yourself, and you soon learn a way to deal with that and get yourself back down safely, shall I say.
Yeah, but we didn't have soft flooring then like they've got now. We just had to land on wood. We landed on the wood while our maths teacher, who was doubling up as a PE teacher, was having a cigarette. But this was, you know, this was the 80s. This was the 80s. They got away with a lot more then. I don't think sports science was even thought of then. But no, you're right.
They got away with it in the 90s as well, mate.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. So I wasn't just an 80s child. But I think, no, it is something that interests me myself, that why do we move so far away from the real fundamentals with youth athletes? When really we don't need to stray. I mean, there's some great research out there, of, you know, some of the stuff by Roger Lloyd is fantastic, you know, and I'm a big fan of his stuff.
Absolutely.
What's that, sorry? Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think they're experts in their field, and I think what I've taken from reading their material is just how you apply it, and how applicable it is. Sometimes you'll see little things in us like, yeah, that's great, I kind of understand the concept, or I know what you're saying, but it's not applicable. I think just a couple of weeks ago, as you very well know, I did my UKSEA accreditation, and one of the conversations in my 16-week case study was contact time. You know, it's all well and being having the most, you know, the best designed program, but it's out of context when you can only spend 2 to 4 hours with someone a week. And I think that's something that.
And that's where it's my have an athletic lifestyle away from the club whilst remaining children. I think it's making the best decision that they can 24/7. That's why I'm trying to get challenges away from, so challenge cards for them to do tasks when they're away from the club, even the little ones. It might be something as simple as, can you stand on one leg for a minute whilst you're brushing your teeth, and can you wave your other arm round that you're not brushing your teeth with? And that's where we'll start increasing volume and doing some of those closed loop work, because that's just an occasion where we can get the parents and get them to start thinking and looking at their bodies and sort of being aware of what they're trying to do and what they're trying to create, and just if they say increase that level of volume and understanding and awareness without taking it away from being a kid, because ultimately I'm setting you a challenge that's just one task to do. It's got nothing to do with athletic development per se, but it's a way of increasing that volume and that contact that impact that can have on them away from the club. And as I say, things like the gymnastics library and just setting challenge cards and doing stuff away from the club that are vitally important, because as you say, there's so many other stimuli that, whether it be sleep, whether it be other forms of recovery, whether it be nutrition, fluctuation, these kids are going to be eating, let's say, 1,200 to 1,600 meals in a year. So that their stimuli that would perhaps make more optimal, and they with their sleep patterns, they're going to go to sleep 365 to, I don't know, 550 times a year. So can we make that as efficient and as beneficial for their recovery and their development as possible? So, developing sleep patterns or sleep strategies or just other ways that we can impact that overall athleticism.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's, as the name of this podcast, 24-hour athlete, but that's what it's about. You know, it's what you do the 23 hours away from training, or, you know, before you come back in. I think you touched on nutrition there, which is important. I've certainly seen some rather strange practice in some clubs of nutritionally, and, you know, at present I can only think of one or two bits of research or at least case studies that are out there for academy level players. I think Emma Stevenson did one recently or a couple of years ago, and I think that's one of the only ones out there. There might be more out there now, I don't know, but it is quite shocking when you read into it and see what, you know, youth athletes are consuming. It's like, okay, you have the potential to become a professional athlete. You know, it's an area that, okay, he's in the academy, he's doing well, let's disregard that. I'm not saying all academies do that, but I think there's a responsibility there. And I think we are getting better at it, but I think there's a responsibility to really get that education across to the parents.
I just think across the board, perhaps not everywhere again, as we say, but it's just an unconscious decision, as you say. Up at Sheffield United, we're sponsored by Paul Nourishment now, who were a local company that produced a really good recovery drink, dairy based. We've been doing a lot of work with Emma up at the Northumbria University, as you say. Emma's work is one of the few papers out there that looks at youth footballers. It's a very good paper for people to read, to have a look at. But as you say, it's one area that we're trying to touch upon and inspire our players. To make those best decisions, that's not good or bad foods, but just, can I understand when Emma picked up again, just periodization, do I need more food on one day than another? Am I going to have roughly before one, am I going to have roughly after? We're not talking grams of foods, we're talking makeup of what meals will look like, or when do I have more sugary stuff, or when do I have more sweets, when do I have all my carbohydrates and just real basic level stuff like that. But again, trying to inspire players to do that. So little ways, I know they've been caused a lot of interest on social media, but we did a Britain's Got Talent, a Great British Bake Off Day, where what we'll try and do is whenever we do any nutritional classroom based work, we'll always try and follow it up with some sort of practical. So
yeah.
Like we did with the neutral As I say, with the pack lunches, just doing little challenges like Great British Bake Off, where we came in, and the players had to bring in their best prepared meal that had carbohydrates, had a protein source, had dairy in it, had a remix of something sweeter, had some sort of fruit and or vegetable in there, and just trying to inspire kids to make decisions that are going to be beneficial for them long term, not just on the pitch, but are going to inform them and educate them for the rest of their lives, hopefully.
Yeah, no, it's important. I think education, I mean, you could talk all day about the scientific level and what we know and what we look at and research, but that's not applicable for a youth athlete or even a professional first team player. You know, you just need to get your point across and educate them as to what they should be taking in, when they should be taking it in, and learn to cook. Just learning to cook is quite a powerful thing. if you can analyse as a player and say, well, yeah, I've got to have proteins, fats, carbs, and this amount and this amount, and just know how to cook stuff. Just get a bit of variety into the diet. You know, it saves. I mean, a former club of mine, we used to the academy players after each game used to pop out their Tupperware and we used to see what they were eating. Because I don't think it's that we didn't trust them. I think it's really just to see, and then they know. You know, is that good fuel? Am I taking that on? And is it going to be good for me? Is it going to help me recover performance-wise? So I think it's a big area, and I think it'll only grow. But I also think from my involvement that we can be a little bit far behind on it and probably needs improving.
Yeah, I would say so as a whole, you're right. Once we've got those foundations of nutrition and sound recovery, before we need to start worrying about the fantasy micromanagement, so higher up that pyramid again. Just looking to just, again, we'll come back to the really basics and the overall behaviours and what we perceive an athlete to be doing in their life choice.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think Nick Grantham, who has been on this podcast, but Nick spoke about his pyramid of recovery. And I think that's an excellent way of looking at it with anything. If you look at nutrition, training, you know, at the top you've got your Olympic athlete doing cryotherapy, which is all of a sudden become very mainstream. I'm not particularly sure why. So you've got cryotherapy, and at the bottom you've just got the basics of nutrition, hydration, and sleep. So for probably 95% of the athletes we'll work with, we probably won't move so much off level one and level two of that pyramid.
Absolutely.
And I think
I don't need to be worried about my compression leggings, what rest am I when I'm only having 4 hours sleep and I'm going to bed after drinking 4 liters a day and 5 bags of Haribo.
Yeah, I think it's so important to just look after the basics, you know, look after the little things and they lead to big things. And I do sometimes get that impression that sometimes we go above and beyond that and there is no need for it. You know, a recent discussion was on altitude masks. Well, as far as I know, they restrict your breathing, and that's nothing near what hypoxia is supposed to do. But it's become a little bit trendy again now, when really we don't need to be doing that, because, you know, I don't know many, unless you play in Chile or Peru, I'm not really sure of many players that play at altitude anyway. But these are the kind of things, they can be frustrating, because they from what we do, they really shift the focus to something that has probably minimal relevance to that athlete. But you've got a... Sorry, Luke, carry on.
No, it's all right.
Cut across you there. You've got a seminar coming up soon, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. On Wednesday, so the 1st of July, I teamed up with Rob Pacey from the Pacey Performance Podcast. There's a S&D coach based up in Huddersfield that used to be at Doncaster that we...
Sorry about that. We lost you there for a minute. We were saying you've got the seminar with Pacey Performance. Carry on.
Yeah, so my dad's been speaking sort of got Preview Beckham, we've got Paul Bauer, who's the head of sports science and medicine at Barnsley, who's going to be speaking about developing strength and athleticism on a shoestring, so on a shoestring budget. And then we've got Ross Derbring, who's the head of sports science at Nottingham Forest with their first team, who's going to be speaking about blending strength and power safely with 13 players. So we're trying to get three guys together who give some wide, trying to cover all the age groups and give a real wide spectrum of ethics in football. And it's something that we're looking to do fairly regularly. So I would say this is the first one that we'll be doing. And I know we've already got, I think, over 30 people that are booked on to walk to Sheffield on Wednesday night from 6 to 9:30. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm really excited to speak and also to listen to Paul and Ross, because I know that they're both two very good S&C coaches. We've got some very good S&C coaches from all over the country that are making way, so it'll be good to speak to those and get a few questions on and ideas from what we have and what we're doing and try and elaborate on that. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
No, it's brilliant, mate. I'll put up the link to that on this podcast, so in the details of the podcast, so anyone who wants to go can click on that and have a look. I think it'd be an excellent day, and you know, seminars like that can only be good for our industry, really. I think there's a lot of good guys working in S&C in football at the moment. It's growing. I think we in my experience, in my shorter experience, you know, in the last few years, I've seen the changes and how progressive we're becoming. I think for a while, you know, probably to start off with, it was a lot of, not many people were sure about it. You know, certainly some clubs around the country, you know, I'm not sure what they deemed as S&C, to be honest. Bodybuilding, I think. But no, I think it is growing, and it's a great discipline to be involved in, and especially from your perspective with the youth athletes, it's extremely rewarding, and I think it's been, yeah, and I think when you see those changes, it's a phenomenal thing, and I know a few lads from another club of mine who've broken into first teams, and it's a fantastic thing to have seen that development in a relatively short time. You know, you can see it on the pitch, and you can see how they move, and you could probably say, you know, couple of years ago, I'm not sure they were, you know, they could do that. So it puts a big smile on your face. But so I'm going to end up here. I know you're driving up the, is it the M1 or the A1?
Yeah, I'm still on the M25.
You could be there a while, mate. It's Friday night. Oh, God. Welcome down south, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much.
No worries.